Hey there, my name is Sam Okus. I'm the editor-in-chief at Nation's Restaurant News, bringing you a very special edition of the Extra Serving podcast. In June, we published NRN's Top 500 list, giving you a definitive look at restaurant chain performance in 2020. We partnered with Data Central and its Firefly 500 platform on this year's Top 500, and it is chock full of insights that can help you benchmark your own brand's performance and strategize for the year ahead. Now, to dig in just a little bit deeper on how brands fared in 2020, we've been providing you with exclusive interviews with leaders from brands that defied the odds by growing in 2020. These snapshots of success give you exclusive access to the winning strategies that are helping restaurant companies navigate uncharted waters. And hopefully they're going to provide you with some ideas for tackling the challenges that you face in your own business. Stay tuned for more snapshots of success in the weeks and months ahead as we explore what exactly went right for those brands that closed 2020 with positive stories to tell. Also, be sure to head to nrn.com/2021top500. That's nrn.com/2021top500 to catch up on all of our snapshots of success and to catch the rest of our Top 500 coverage, which includes a robust data package with sales and unit count information for the nation's top 500 chain restaurants. And now let's roll into today's Snapshots of Success interview from NRN's 2021 Top 500.
Hi, this is Brett Thorne, Senior Food and Beverage Editor of Nation Restaurant News, speaking with Hooters CEO Sal Mellili.
It looks like, at least from the numbers that we have, that you guys had a good year in 2020. So how did you do that?
We did, actually, Brett. Great question. You know, we were very blessed that we, A, have a very, very loyal user base, right? The Hooters Nation, as we like to refer to it, is alive and well. And then the second piece of that is, we all know how the world turned on a dime, but we had deep partnerships and relationships with the DSP providers, delivery service providers, you know, way before the pandemic ever came along. So for us, when the dine-in business suddenly stopped overnight, we were able to really then leverage that relationship and our experience on the delivery side and the delivery platform. So that's really what enabled us to do so well. And then as the pandemic transitioned and, you know, some states opened back up, some states relaxed some of the curfews and the opening and the hours. Again, very honored to have such a loyal customer base that they came back very quick. They came back very fast. They came back more frequent. So again, our core demographic, our core Hooters fan is really what got us through this pandemic. And we're just happy that we're able to, you know, get back to the full dine-in experience now. And some people are still using it both ways, right? The beauty of our brand is that you can use this any way you want, whenever you're ready, as we like to say. But if you don't feel like cooking, okay, great. That happened during the pandemic. You had no choice, right? But now you're tired of cooking. You want to get out of the house and you're able to get back out and experience the full service Hooters. So we've been very, very fortunate.
So you had already partnerships with the third-party delivery companies. Is that because of Hoot's Wings that you'd already started opening in 2017? Or was it because you were already, everybody knew that delivery was going to be a growing part of the business even before the pandemic. So was it Hoot's Wings or your own anticipation of the core brand or both? Or tell me about it.
Yeah, a combination, but it really started with the core brand, right? Again, that was really the evolution that led us to get into Hoot's and on the fast casual version. But, you know, before the pandemic, like you indicated, our core brand, our product was already being consumed at home. It was already being picked up and or delivered. So that product and that mechanism to have the food delivered off premise already existed. So, and, you know, no particular order, but the Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub, you know, Favor, Bite, all, we were partnered with everyone's as opposed to doing an exclusive deal. So we were really able, again, to give our consumer exactly what they wanted, the way they wanted. And some folks are brand loyal to different providers and you've only got so much real estate on your phone. So we worked with everyone. And then that enabled us to not only, you know, continue on the core brand, but then as Hoot's came along, you know, Hoot's Wings then was a natural extension of that. We were able to leverage the partnerships and the relationships and just sort of tack that on to the existing portfolio.
So let me see if I understand correctly. Hoot's is the fast casual brand that you started in 2017, right?
Correct. We took a subset of the menu and took the top selling best items that were really delivered or picked up and said, let's just make the fast casual version of ourselves. And then that's really where it came from. And out of that menu, it wasn't what Brett liked or what Sal liked. We just said, hey, what is the consumer like?
Right.
Really drove the mechanism. So we probably started designing that back in 2014, 2013. We had some early ideas. It took us a little while. I'll be the first to admit I'm not that bright, but we kind of figured it out over time. And when 17 came along, then we were ready to do the first prototype. We opened in Cicero, which is outside of Chicago. It was the first unit.
Right. And now you have 7, right? 3 in Atlanta, 3 in Chicagoland, and 1, I forget where.
In St. Petersburg, Florida. Correct. Yep.
But then there's Hoots Wings. Is that your virtual brand?
So Hoots Wings and Hoots is the same thing.
All right.
The brick and mortar. What's really interesting is when you talk about the virtual brand, you know, again, prior to the pandemic, we actually have Hootie's Burger Bar, which is a virtual concept. Actually, one of the delivery providers came to us and said, hey, we'd love to do this idea with you based on our search. And they came up with the idea and the need for burgers. So we said, great, you can order your Hootie's Burger Bar. And oh, by the way, do you want some wings? You want some fries? So it was a natural menu. And then since then, with the explosion of the virtual brands, we actually now have Hootie's Bait and Tackle, which is our seafood items that we have, but you can still get the wings added on, an additional product. And we just launched Hootie's Chicken Tenders. So again, all within the same kitchen, same SKUs, but it's been a really nice, you know, marketing piece to be able to partner with the DSPs to expand into these virtuals. We got a few more up our sleeves, but perhaps for our next interview, I'll have more detail on those.
So why do you need a different virtual brand for every category of your menu? Does that draw your customers more easily, or what does it do?
Yeah, good question. And it's interesting, some of the feedback that we got from the delivery providers, again, because we've got a large national footprint, right? So when those delivery providers partner with us, it's not that they're just getting, you know, Sal's little corner deli, right? They're getting a footprint across the country, so therefore they can really move the volume. They came to us and said, hey, these are some of the items that we feel is a void or a need in the marketplace, right? So in this particular example, what really launched it for us was Uber Eats. They said, hey, burgers, big demand, big searched item. Besides all the other players in the category, we feel there's an opportunity to help launch some more virtual ideas around that. So we already have a phenomenal burger on the menu. It just made sense then. We're already have the SKUs. We're already putting it in a bag. They're already used to picking it up at our restaurants. And then you could add on more products. It was just sort of a natural extension. So it really, really served them for their need in terms of what their consumers were looking for, and then just add it on to sales for us in terms of the virtual component.
So it contributes to incremental sales.
Yes.
I mean, clearly it's a different occasion if someone's going to eat in the restaurant or they're going to get takeout or delivery. So that would be incremental.
Totally different, right? And you touch on a really good point, right? Depending on your schedule and your life, you know, pre-pandemic, pandemic, and now post-pandemic, how do you want to use our brand, right? Somebody taught me a long time ago, it's not what you think about a brand, it's how you feel when you interact with that brand. And I think that's really the key cornerstone for us. Our consumer, when they come in, they know it's going to be the escape from the rigors of everyday life, right? Our concept lends itself to being casual and carefree, and you know, you can spill food on the floor, perhaps, or the game's on TV, and there's a family at one table, and there's a softball team at another. So, but if you don't want that experience, or maybe you're still not comfortable getting out of the house yet, you have the absolute tremendous opportunity then to get all those products delivered or picked up in different forms or fashion. So it really gives us a lot of flexibility, which has been very helpful coming out of the pandemic.
When even if you're comfortable going out, maybe you don't want to put your shoes on.
And right. So,
I mean, you were getting all of this off the ground before the pandemic. There was already a demand for more people eating your food at home.
Absolutely. And really the pandemic just put an accelerant on that, right? When we got to the point where, I mean, we started selling cocktails to go and beer to go and, you know, oh, wings. But now all of a sudden I'm feeding a family of four, or perhaps you were maybe cheating and meeting on the driveway with your neighbors. And, and suddenly became larger packs or bundles, and let's get some burgers and we'll get some fries on there. So that the size of the basket actually increased. But it was really helpful that, again, we had those partnerships because, you know, folks that tried to get into the delivery business, it was really too late in terms of the technology and getting the service and being able to ramp up with the point of sale and the integration. So, humbly, we were a little ahead of our time on that, and it just continues to serve us well.
And that meant you could get the hardware you needed to do third-party delivery, and it wasn't all sold out, which
exactly.
seemed to happen pretty quick last April.
Yep, yeah. We all know, some of us have amnesia, but the world turned upside down overnight, right? Mm-hmm. So when you started getting the, we are now closed, it's only food to go, we were very quickly able to shift, pivot, pull that lever, and it just really helped us. And it really a testament to our customers and really our employees, right? If people say, hey, what business are you in? Oh, you're in the chicken wing business, you're in the sports business. I said, no, we're really in the people business, right? Externally, our consumers that have made our brand one of the tops in the world after nearly four decades and could not be done without our team members, right? It's we say we bleed orange internally, and I am humbly blessed to have a phenomenal operating team that has delivered over and over and over and over again. So really, it's the customers and our team that was able to help us weather this pandemic.
So we are now coming out of the pandemic. I have been fully vaccinated for 2.5 months. So I've really been contributing to my local economy. I'm going out pretty much every night and
yeah. So pent up demand, that's good.
Yes, my demand was definitely pent up. So, and you know, it's not about me, but I think a lot of consumers are the same way. So how has that affected, I assume your dining rooms are full, but has off-premises sales maintained or at least is it higher than it was in 2019?
Yeah, great question, Brad. You nailed it. You're exactly right. As that dine-in business has come back, I just read an article the other day, I think by Jefferies, that said, you know, the next several years should be the golden years of casual dining, right? So as that continues to evolve and come back, some folks still don't want to get out, or maybe I get out a little bit. So we've seen the numbers against 19 from a delivery food to go perspective, definitely up over 19, slipped a little bit from 20 because of that trade-off now, right? Exactly as you described, people are now leaving the home, getting out, having to dine in. So, you know, we may have dropped a few points on the food to go, but definitely significantly higher than where it was in 19. So I think it's the muscle memory. I really think that's going to be here to stay. And especially as the summer begins to evolve, you know, around the corner before we know it, it'll be football season for us, which is a great time of year. So those dine in, those gathering occasions are continuing momentum and come back. And again, fortunately, we're exceeding 2019 numbers on all fronts. So we're in a very blessed position right now.
Well, and probably most people didn't realize they could order Hooters for delivery before the pandemic, and now they know they can.
Yeah, really an opportunity, right? Again, out of every I'm going to say pandemic, but out of every crisis, you know, becomes an opportunity. And that's exactly that, and enabled us to do that, to reach our consumer, you know, be able to order online, the whole digital component, using your phone. So from that perspective, it really did create another opportunity for us. And then you tack on the virtual brands and Hoots Wings. I'm very bullish about the outlook of where our future is.
So the economics of delivery is different from in restaurant dining, because customers pay delivery fees, you pay delivery fees. How have your franchisees managed costs in the face of added costs from delivery?
Yeah, great question. You know, we're all in that boat, right? And we're all similar, whether it's us as the franchisor or our franchisee partners that we have. And I say partners because that is critical, right? There's no successful franchisor without successful franchisees, and vice versa. So, you know, in terms of the cost structure, we've been able to help them on a little bit of support size because of the scale, right? And that's given us a little bit of leverage. It's given us the ability to have some good partnerships and good dialogue around what that cost structure looks like. But the consumer, again, is really what is driving it. And because of the convenience factor, because of the pandemic, you're right. There's extra fees. There's fees on top of fees. There's delivery fees. There's surcharges. There's gratuities. So but you don't have to leave your home, or it's the convenience factor, or you get it the way you want it when you want it. So we find that across many sectors, the consumer is willing to pay for that. And then how can we best support our stores and our franchisees to make sure that they have the delivery platforms, they have the technology to make sure that they can get the ordering in, the partnerships with the DSPs, and then help leverage some of the cost side with what the cost and the fee structure looks like coming from the provider.
And then have you had a lot of conversation with your franchise partners about how much to charge for delivery? Have you had to do a lot of math on that?
Yeah, good question, right? While we don't dictate pricing to our franchisees, we highly encourage them to look at, you know, what does the competitive set do in the marketplace, right? What are they facing? And it's going to vary by market. We have our pricing. We have our menus. We have our online. We also try to continue to drive our consumers directly to order through us, right? To go through our app, through our portal, you know, is advantageous to the consumer, is advantageous to us. But again, when you look at your own phone, you've got that pretty valuable real estate on the screen. You know, it's only going to take so many icons and so many apps. So we just want to make sure that we can continue to be on that screen and compete in that environment.
And how does that work? Do you take the order and obviously process it, et cetera, but then is the DSPs that actually deliver it, or are you experimenting with delivering yourself?
Correct. The first part, we are not in the deliver by ourself business, but then, yeah, we will take that order in and then we dispatch it out and a, you know, third party delivery provider will pick that product up and deliver it. But the order would be initiated directly through us versus coming through, you know, again, one of the providers.
Right, right. So there are fewer fees. It's a better deal.
Exactly.
For
yep. It's more advantageous to both parties, right? Clearly.
Right. So are delivery checks still higher than in-room checks? Or were they, I assume they were during the pandemic. Is that still the case?
Well, during the pandemic, at one point, it's all we had. So it was the only check.
Good point. But
it's definitely higher than 19. And the reason everybody's using that, because you can't go against 20, right? But the delivery side of it, larger orders, those orders are sticking. It's definitely larger orders usually in the restaurant, right? Because now we have the opportunity while you're watching the game or enjoying your friends, let's get a pitcher of beer, perhaps some drinks. Hey, you know what? Extra innings. Why don't we get 20 more wings, Brett, and we'll hang out a little bit longer, right? So that check average is certainly larger on the in-dining side. But we've certainly seen an uptick on both. And again, I think the stimulus money that came, people are back to getting jobs. There's some greater confidence in that, and toppled with the demand of being out around other people and social occasions is certainly rising both tides on those. But definitely the dine-in side is clearly a higher check and more advantageous and more profitable.
Because of the drinks. And because Absolutely. Nobody's paying any delivery fees, and drinks, obviously, even if it's just soda, is much more profitable than
absolutely
else.
Right. It's something that let alone if you upgrade to a beer or a cocktail or anything else.
Were you allowed to deliver beer and cocktails in most markets, or was it really a mixed bag?
Definitely a mixed bag, right? Some municipalities were more forward-thinking and maybe perhaps moved quicker on adopting laws or passages of, you know, different rights that we were able to do within different municipalities. And the same thing happened really with the reopening, right? Different municipalities moved at different paces and relied on different data points. And so some opened later, some opened sooner. Some had restrictions. Some restrictions lasted longer. Alcohol, some places it's still here to stay that we can deliver. So it really has been a mixed bag, but depending upon the city or the county, the municipality, they've been helpful in terms of helping us, you know, get those things achieved that perhaps we didn't have before. And I would say today we're probably near 100%. There's still a couple places that are still on some restrictions with a curfew. But for the most part, we were lucky because a majority of our stuff is in the Southeast. Opened a little faster, a little quicker. You know, we have a store there in New York City, as you know, that, still isn't open today. So it really just varies among the locations. But again, most of our portfolio has been pretty blessed because we were able to open up and open up quicker and just made our consumer come back faster. You know, not to mention the closures, right? I mean, we did lose a few restaurants. I think we closed four during the pandemic out of our 200. So again, great opportunity for for a lot of people to clean up maybe some locations they didn't have, or perhaps an underperforming store or lease. But by and large, our fleet came through intact, and we're in a very good position.
Were you able to open any new restaurants during the pandemic?
We did. Ironically, we opened up three of the Hoots restaurants during the pandemic, and really for that need, right? Didn't require the dine-in experience. The DSPs were up and running. So it enabled us to do that in a few markets. So that was helpful. The other thing that we did during the pandemic is we really opened up the pipeline for franchising, right? And specifically Hoots, because of the model and because of the delivery. So we've got a robust pipeline now coming out of this, which is nice. Multi-unit operators in the space, well capitalized. You know, perhaps they own a pizza concept or a Mexican concept. And now you tuck in chicken wings. It's a nice addition to their portfolio. So that's been a tremendous opportunity. And now, as we hit to the back half of the year, you know, ramping up on as full service comes back, franchising the core brand Hooters alongside of, you know, the fast casual version Hoots. So again, great opportunity for growth. Here we are nearly four decades later, and coming out of this, we're in a good position to launch again.
Well, there is the new challenge, or maybe recurring challenge, of wing prices, which are up again. And so you sell so many wings. How do you manage that cost? Sell more beer?
Yeah, Brett, that's a good point. So a partner of mine a long time ago said the only thing that's consistent about the wing business is it's inconsistent, right? And we're finding that here again now, where it's consistently swung, the pendulum is way out there. So there's a demand, there's a shortage, there's prices, there's a lot of moving parts around that. The really good thing for our brand is, you know, we've been in this business for nearly four decades. So it helps us to have that experience and partnerships with the chicken provider. I mean, our supply chain team is top notch in the industry. I mean, they work every day around the globe, especially here in the United States, about trucks and distributors and farms and our partnerships and relationships. So that helps tremendously. The second piece of that is really our menu. I mean, when you think of Hooters, what's the first thing you think of?
Well, either Hooters girls or wings, depending on my
bingo. Menu. You got it, right? So fortunately, we've got Hooter girls. Now we're trying to get more wings. But what people don't know is, and I think they're pleasantly surprised, that as you move around the menu, the boneless wings that we have, now the launch of the chicken tenders, our buffalo shrimp is absolutely phenomenal. If you haven't tried it, I highly recommend it. Peel and eat shrimp, crab legs, sandwiches, burgers, salads. So there's more to the menu. So, you know, because of the craveability of our sauces, that when situations like this in the wing market, we've seen it before. So, you know, we'll then look at different menu mixes. You know, perhaps the bundle that we're going to look at for football season would include wings as opposed to the bone-in wing. So, you know, we've got the flexibility and the latitude that same unique proprietary breaded product that nobody else has, but then we put that breading on our boneless. We put that breading on our buffalo shrimp. We still have the same signature sauces and rubs. So to have the flexibility to be able to offer folks different items on the menu, take some of the pressure off of that bone-in. Look, the bone-in wing will swing back. It'll go the other way again. Again, 37 years later, we've seen it before. It's just we're very fortunate that we're not beholden to just one product.
Well, and from what I understand, younger customers, even those approaching middle age, from millennials on down, tend to prefer boneless wings, which are just, you know, breast, but you call it boneless wings and they're psyched about it.
Absolutely. And actually, you did touch on a great point there, two great points. But, you know, one is it's 100% white breast meat. I mean, it's not a mystery meat, right? It's not a compressed product. It's the real deal. We size the spec to be large. And then some people like it. It's easier. You don't have the mess of eating off the bone. And then some people get them like the chicken tenders. They get them plain and they get, well, I'm going to try five or six different sauces. And heck, I know my son and his buddies, they order a bunch of them plain and they get 25 different sauces and they'll just start dipping and mixing and matching. So to your point, to that younger demographic, you're spot on that. It's 100% correct.
So I have a personal question. I like to eat chicken wings and also shrimp and crab legs. So when is the New York City location reopening?
That is a great question. We have a phenomenal landlord in Manhattan, which I think says a lot, and we're trying to navigate new terms with him. So Arnie, if you're listening, no, but at the end of the day, we would anticipate as the garden comes back. You know, we also have a store in Queens that's out that way. We've got several stores in New Jersey, but the closest one in New York City is right across from Madison Square Garden. So, yeah, the sooner we can get our whole fleet back intact, the happier we'll be, but more important, our customers will be.
So is the delay that there aren't enough customers in that part of Manhattan yet?
Yeah, you know, the garden's ramping back up because right. A piece of our business is based on that. So as the garden's reopening and ramping up, you know, we're looking at getting employees back. What does the timing on that look like? You know, working through some negotiations with our landlord in terms of, hey, how do we handle the leases and things like that moving forward, which really we've done around our entire system, right? That's another piece that I think most people had to go through, and having frank conversations with their landlords. And, you know, again, having long-term partnerships with them, we were able to come to some great terms. So that's been helpful. So like any city, especially in New York, as it comes back more, and I think more folks are back in the office and transit system and subway riders, it'll naturally evolve to, you know, making that decision to reopen.
Sal, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. Congratulations on making it through 2020. It sounds like stronger. So
yeah, great. Thank you for having me. Again, we're very honored and happy to be where we are. It's a tremendous, iconic brand that has weathered calamities before, and we're doing it again. So thanks for the time, Brett. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for yours.